Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Mini PC Show. This is episode 27 on the Podnuts Network. We've got a full crew today. We got Door to Door Geek, and we got Brian, and we're ready to talk about some little PCs, mini PCs. How you doing, Brian?
I am doing fantastic. Happy to be here.
You're all moved in. You're on a wired connection, just as we have had commanded you to be. You obliged finally. You broke down and plugged the thing in. Yay.
Yes, it took me, I would say, 4 days to wallfish my office. And just my office alone, not including all the other sites or areas in my house that I had to wire up.
Wallfish?
This, yeah.
You're not just dragging the cords across the floor or nothing like that?
Oh, no.
Oh.
No.
Yeah, I think you'd be highly disappointed if you were to come over here. It's not the home of a network administrator or setup guy at all here.
No, it just looks cleaner that way. Mm-hmm. That way no one's tripping over stuff and there's not a ton of wires hanging everywhere.
Actually, mine's in a corner. It's all tucked back behind things. It's mm-hmm. concrete walls down here. I couldn't wallfish it probably without major excavation and drilling and concrete dust and that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just want to clear the air. It didn't take me that long because I'm not good at wallfishing. It just took me that long because it was that difficult to wallfish.
So what are you running into things as you're going down the wall?
Yeah, I kept running into stuff. Ended up losing a couple of snakes. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty at all.
But your setup, you're happy with your setup? You got the end results good?
I am. Yep, I am. I was able to put in 2 Cat 5s. I actually wanted to do... I'm so bent on fiber. That's not even funny. Yeah. I wanted to do a fiber run in here, but I'll do that some other day.
Yeah, you got the Cat 5s in there. You can just tape it to it and pull it through, right?
Yeah. I made sure I put myself a chase and the lead as well, too. So
that's like an extra piece of string you leave in there?
Yeah. Just makes it that much easier.
It's like pro stuff, man. That's like planning ahead for the future.
Oh, yeah. Definitely got a plan ahead. Thank you. I appreciate that. It gives me confidence because I don't think of myself that way.
Dor, how's your cables ran in your neck of the woods that you're using there?
Simple. We don't have any. We are completely wireless house. Basically, brand new construction. We were the first people to ever live here. And as soon as we moved in here, the first thing my wife said was, I don't want holes all over the place. One wall is a firewall between us and the other townhouse. We're a duplex townhouse, whatever the hell that means. So there's only 3 walls we can go through. One wall is the outside wall, the direct opposite, which is just stairwells going up, basically. So we then only have really 2 walls, which, it just sounded too difficult. So wireless repeaters galore. You know what I mean? That's how I roll.
But not in your studio where you're hooked up right now, that's all.
Oh, hell no. This is all Cat 7P, man.
It's like you got like a 3-foot run from that modem to that PC you're on right now.
Literally, the cable out of the computer to the router is 3 foot. Then from the router to the modem is 1 foot.
Yeah, that's lossless, man. Lossless Dor.
Well, it's as good as I can get, I'll say that. I'll say, Brian, I'm always happy to have you back on. I know moving is sometimes fun, sometimes essential, learning experience, life-changing, whatever. But the one thing I know it can be, and that is ridiculously stressful. So I'm happy you made it out the other side of that sane.
I feel for you, Brian. Moving's, to me, I haven't moved that much, and it's never fun. I despise it, man.
I don't understand how people do it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, families move constantly, especially within Comcast. I've noticed a lot of folks that are higher up, senior managers and so forth. They VPs, they move around the country left and right. And I don't know if I can do that.
Well, I'll say if my company was paying for movers, it would be much easier. I know that.
That's true.
Hey, we have more than a couple emails, and I will say more than a couple might have gotten gently misplaced. So what I'll say is if you do not hear your email that you sent in on this episode, feel free, send it in again. I will do a much better job of marking all of the emails. We only have a couple people entered right now for the Pi Zero giveaway. So we're going to let that go at least one more episode, maybe just one more episode. So you do have time to enter for that free one. And I will say really quick, this week, I'm going to try to publish this as quick as I possibly can. Micro Center was running a in-store special, 99 cents for a Pi Zero, normally $5. I'm going to say this right now. I'm thinking they're getting ready to rev the Pi Zero to the 0.1 or whatever, the 0B or something. And Micro Center just happens to know about it, so they're offloading as much as they possibly can right now. Maybe I'm completely wrong. I don't know.
That makes sense. It's hard to believe they could sell for a buck, though.
Well, you haven't been in a Micro Center, because typically what they do is they say $5 computer, then you go to pick something up, and it's a $25 or $30 bundle, because they want to sell you the SD card and the power supply and this and that and the, you know, and the HDMI cable and everything. So by the time you're done, it's nearly $30.
I think the only time I was in a Micro Center was with you, Dor.
Oh, that was a blur.
Which one were you in?
Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a older gentleman by the name of John Mad Dog Hall, that if you don't know who he is, I implore the listeners of the show, Wikipedia, John Mad Dog Hall, was in need of cables. And when John Mad Dog Hall is at a conference and is in the need of anything, whether it's beer, scotch, cables, microphone, USB keys, laptop computers, dinner, you oblige. You do what you can to make the man happy. The man's been through enough in his life already. So I immediately hopped in the van. We went down Micro Center. I remember more than a couple people in our group were goggling over the cashier.
I don't remember the cashier, but I think that's the first time I've ever seen a store dump bin of just hard drives laying in a bin. You just grab a couple, throw them in your basket.
Yeah, they were
hard drives.
Yeah. They were all white label drives, just in a plain sleeve you buy. But the cashier was female, under 24, and said she ran Ubuntu. And I remember a couple of guys at the Linux Fest wanted to stay and chat. And I'm like, guys, this old white man needs us. We have to go.
All right. That may have been one of I might have been part of that then. Who knows? Okay. So I'm going to start the first one that did make it through and didn't get gently displaced. Comes from Joe Heck. He says, he's just talking about the last show. He says, wow, what an excellent show, guys. The auto quality was top-notch. And I stand up and salute Dor's decision to dump Hangouts in favor of OpenJitsi and their WebRTC solution. I found listening to the show to be a very enjoyable way to spend my Sunday morning. Be reminiscent of Dor's most excellent The Server Show, and the content to be of a quality of a podcast I could only hope to ever have been a part of. Thanks so much, guys, Joe. And I had to respond to him back. I'm like, Joe, you're a part of the show in my heart every time I have my morning coffee, because I drink my coffee every day out of a mini PC show mug that he created and sent to me. He made for me. So I never go a weekday anyway without thinking of Joe.
And that's a reminder. I'm going to get the link from Joe. I'm going to have it in the notes. You can now, I believe, independently, if you want to go order a custom Podnuts mug from Joe's company. He's fully validated, authorized reseller, if you will, of Podnuts mugs. And I'll say this, Joe, I love everything about Jitsi except 5 minutes before doing a show. For instance, tonight, we sat here, us three people and my broadcasting rig, for 5 minutes, each of us refreshing our page. And I know that's not WebRTC. I'm going to look at trying to set up a VPN server, just a private server that we use as a WebRTC host, so we can try to connect through that. Maybe we'll see better performances. I'll say when we get it to work, it is by far superior to Google Hangouts. I just wish it did lower thirds. And saying that, I know Joe now has a 3.5-hour sprint of code where he's going to have his own Jitsi server with custom lower thirds in what is to me a blink of an eye.
Probably. I'm going to move. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
No, I'm just saying that's a wonderful idea. I Didn't even dawn on me to think of doing something like that.
Yeah, if somebody can get it done, it's Joe. All right, I keep hitting my email, and then it loses my tab. So I'm going to go to the next one here, and this one. That one was from Joe, so we'll go to this one. This is from Ali P. It said, my personal experience with the Fire Stick Kodi Fusion TV. And this is what we were talking about the last couple episodes of the people randomly coming up to me and saying, hey, I got a hacked Amazon Fire PC stick from a guy, and I get everything. So I know I have done this. Dor, I think you said you did it too. And here's Ali P's experience. It says, hey, guys, I just got some free time this weekend and finally played around with the Fusion TV add-ons for Kodi, and I wanted to let you know about my experience so far. First of all, thanks so much for reading the first email I sent you and using it as a show topic. I've never written an email to a podcast before. This was the first time I tried to contact podcast hosts, and I just really appreciate how friendly you guys were when you didn't even know me. That's why I'm writing a follow-up email. I appreciate Dor taking the time to reply to me personally, so I wanted to make sure to update him on how I use the link he provided. Dor complained that you don't get a keyboard for the Fire Stick, and to me, trying to install the Kodi add-on and manually trying to type out all of those links on the Fire TV remote looked like a nightmare. I can almost rationalize how people are charging double for the modded Fire Sticks, because it has to be something like 30 to 60 minutes minimum of frustrating clicks just to get the Kodi with the add-on set up. Then more frustrating clicks to navigate deeper into the menus to watch something. Since Kodi on a Fire Stick seemed like more trouble than it's worth, I decided to deploy my beloved Raspberry Pi 2 in my first email to you. I mentioned that I run OpenELEC on Pi 2. The location where I have my OpenELEC Pi hooked up is a location with no internet access. So I installed OpenELEC. Am I saying that right, Dor? OpenELEC?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I believe so.
So I installed OpenELEC sometime last year, and it's never really been updated. Last night I did a fresh noobs installation, and I installed the newer evolution of OpenELEC, which is now called LibreELEC. Once I was running the most recent Kodi on my Pi 2 through LibreELEC, I installed the Fusion TV add-ons package with a process from Dor's video, and I thankfully had my wireless mouse and keyboard to use for the whole setup. My review of the Fusion TV add-ons can be summed up in saying, it's just a free novelty. I successfully did some live channel streams, and streaming live channels can sometimes be difficult on a full-blown PC, so I was impressed by the live streams. As so far as movies and TV shows, I could hardly get anything to stream no matter what trending popular movie TV shows I was watching, or I was searching. I got a couple random movies to play, and the stream quality looked very poor. It looked pretty, very poor, I think, for movies or TV shows. You're better off obtaining a high-def file of what you want to watch and playing it locally or streaming from your favorite mainstream provider. I realize this is a case of you get what you pay for. I pay for Amazon Prime every month, pay for Netflix, and I am paid for the Fire Stick, and I realize that continuous streams of money is what has allowed Amazon and the add-on providers to optimize the Fire Stick interface. I'm not the guy who complains about free content, and I have no place to complain about the Fusion TV add-ons if I didn't pay for them. So I don't mean it as a complaint, but just stating the facts. The Fusion TV thing is never going to measure up to the big players like Roku and Fire Stick, because they just don't have the same amount of money and licensing going into the product or project. While these Fusion TV add-ons aren't going to compete with my stock Fire Stick interface, it was still something fun to mess around with. I'm going to keep the add-ons installed on my Pi 2, and maybe I'll experiment with them more when I'm bored in the future. I enjoyed your discussion on the topic, and I hope that it generated interest with your other listeners. I know this email's running long, and I hope you can keep in touch, and I hope I can keep in touch with you guys about mini PC stuff in general. Dor, if you could add my email to your Mattermost server, I can start hanging out in there, and maybe I can catch you online one day and chat one-on-one. Once again, thank you so much for everything, and by now, I feel like a true Podnutsian. I can't wait to hear future Podnuts, or future podcasts from you guys, and I hope to keep in touch. Sincerely, Ali P. And, go ahead, Dor.
Man, Ali, first off, I thank him. He immediately, after I replied to his email, made a monetary donation to Podnuts. So thank you very much, Ali. Trust me when I tell you, support means everything. Secondly, I'm afraid I spoiled you because I'm pretty sure any other podcast you ever email will never even reply, because at least that's my experience. And I got to ask, I know I had some experience with the Fire, the Kodi plugin and stuff. Brian, did you ever get a chance to play with this?
No, I did not.
Okay, I'll say this. Okay, really quick. First off, you load up Kodi, whatever you want to call it, on whatever operating system. It doesn't matter even. It could be a Windows box or a Mac box. You go to install the FusionTV.ag plugin. You do this, boom, boom, boom. It actually installs, I believe, more than 8 plugins. And the one thing I'll say I did find out is Exodus is an example of one of the plugins. If you go into that plugin, you can search for TV, search for movies, blah, 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 blah. You can also create an account, and you can also set an option that when you search for content and click it, you're not streaming it. You're actually optioning to download it for later. So you can have some of those plugins configured to, instead of trying to stream the content, instead mark it for download. Like one of the plugins I actually liked, which wasn't on the main screen, is called Pear. And the reason I liked Pear was, for instance, Front Row Sports is a site where you can go to and watch any NFL game, any Major League Baseball game, any Premier League soccer game, any boxing event, any UFC MMA event, almost any type of sports that's broadcast anywhere in the world, you can watch on that site. But also, and when you scroll through their channels, like one of the channels I saw that I actually watched for a little bit was the 24/7 Seinfeld channel. So basically, you just click it and it starts wherever it's at playing a Seinfeld show, and it just nonstop plays, endlessly plays episodes of Seinfelds with no ads.
When you say Pear, is it P-E-A-R or P-A-I-R?
Sorry, I do believe it's P-E-A-R-TV. Okay. I believe is the name of the plugin. The gimmick is you have to go either click on video and then click on plugins, or you have to go into any of the plugins and then hit the up directory at the top, and then you'll be back to the list of all the plugins.
Okay.
And there's a lot. There's actually a lot.
Yep.
I took it off my Odroid C1. I put it on my Odroid C2. 2 gigs of RAM, quad core, 2 gigahertz processor, blah, 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 blah. Hard kernel, updated Android on it, runs like butter. A $2 Wi-Fi dongle I got from Amazon Review Trader, which is still only like $8. I plugged that thing up. I'm getting sometimes almost 20 meg speed. I mean, that's good speed. That's really good speed. And still, some things my wife wants to stream just won't stream. So I understand his pain. It's not, I got this hacked Fire Stick, I can get anything. It's, I got a hacked Fire Stick, I can search for anything, and I can stream some stuff.
Yes.
Kind of thing, you know. And some of the stuff you stream, the quality is so poor. I mean, it makes, no offense, it makes burnt down trailer parks look like Beverly Hills. The quality is so poor on some of these videos. And then other videos, you turn it on, and it for all I can tell with my bad eyes, it's 4K. It looks so good.
I didn't see the streaming quality problems, but the thing is, I'm watching on a 50-inch plasma TV with a semi really messed up video card in it that I tried to fix, and it's like solarized effect or something all the time. So nothing ever looks that great. One of the live streaming channels, I found two of these. I don't know if anybody else is into this, but it's cat like hotels or something, live cat streams, where it's just like, you know, 12 kittens living in a room, and somebody's got a webcam on them 24/7.
Yeah, well, hold on. Let me think about that for a couple seconds and ponder. No, I'm not interested in that.
I haven't tried the this add-on, but I have tried the one channel add-on, which allows me to get, you know, a lot of the movies that are in theater and just have come out of the theater as well too, on DVD and so forth. And that quality, to me, depending on what content you're watching, can sometimes be a bootleg quality, you know, and you can get some stuff that are, that's 720 and 1080p, but not when it's still in theaters.
Yeah. So I understand the allure of it. I understand people's desire to have it, but it's the kind of thing, the grass is always greener on the other side. Navigating a genuine set-top box, while as frustrating as some people say, it's still simple and quick compared to some of these Kodi plugin interfaces. Mm-hmm. And he did hint that interface and your interface to it is everything. If you have the right controller, I'm sure it's easier, but it's still a hell of a lot of clicks.
And I wasn't too dismayed using the Amazon Fire Stick remote to set it up. It wasn't that bad. My biggest problem was that I had something with my Amazon account that I had to. I had purchased Kodi in the past, and somehow that messed up this experience. I had to go back and go into my Amazon account and kind of delete that off of my apps that I owned somehow or something like that, and then it started working. But I think that was probably Kodi was a free app of the day back when Amazon did free app of the days, and that kind of messed me up this time, but it's all good.
Yeah, and if you go to kodi.tv/download, you will always get a newer version than anything else you install, whether it's from Google Play, whether it's from Amazon, whether it's anywhere in the world you get it. You will always get a newer version by going to there. And I do believe it's worth it because it's going to be more stable, higher quality of video, and better add-on compatibility for the most part.
Did you see a lot of difference in the streaming and video quality when you went from the Odroid 2 to the 3?
I'll say it was more stable with the original Odroid. When my wife tried to stream back-to-back-to-back-to-back episodes, by like the second or third episode, sometimes it just didn't want to work. We're with the C2, we're having much less issues. And I honestly think it's strictly a RAM thing.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, our next email is from Jesse, and Jesse Beach, and he says, "Hey, guys, this is Jesse in St. Peter's, Missouri. Can't remember which show it was, but Eric was talking about figuring out how to set up the Kodi on the Fire Stick. I use it all the time, and have done lots of setups for friends. So you guys want any help in the process, let me know, Jesse." Well, thank you, Jesse. We got it now. I probably would have used the help, but we got through it.
Well, I did send Jesse the basic link to the video that I found that we use as our basis for it, and he basically confirmed, yeah, that's looks like what I kind of have. So, you know, it's all the same.
Go back here. Find another email. Oh, I'm having such a hard time navigating these emails today.
I don't know, but you don't have to say anything because I typically use noise cancellation, and by talking,
it stops that.
Make it sound horrible.
Okay, we got another one from Jesse. Hey guys, Jesse in St. Peter's. Listening to you guys talking on the last episode, door agree, typing on the remote sucks. But what can you do? But what you can do is download the Fire TV remote app in the Play Store, and it links over Wi-Fi. It does two nice things. If you don't have the voice remote, the app has it. It will also launch a keyboard for the search fills. Unfortunately, the voice remote won't do any Kodi searches, but it's useful for launching music streams or checking the weather. That's true. And I haven't used my Fire TV app on my phone for a while. That would definitely be a good use for it, though. Did you use the Fire TV stick, right? Is that what you got or not? Or just the Odroids?
No, I don't have any Fire Stick, even though now I believe you can even get them as low as $25. So I ain't going to lie, I was tempted to replace the Odroid C1 with a Fire Stick. But then I said, let me try the C2 and see what kind of results I get. And so far, she's really happy. And she has Netflix on it, thanks to Android. There really isn't much more she needs.
Yeah, I keep going back thinking maybe I want the Amazon Fire TV, but maybe it's just not new enough. I don't know.
I'll say this. If you turn on your air conditioning and 73 just isn't enough, you got to take it down to 71, then maybe you should get the Fire box. Because to me, all you're going to get with it is a little bit of speed boost, a little bit of performance increase.
A little bit more games that are available for it, I think, for me.
Yeah, If your goal, if you have at least, I would say, a 20% time of I would like to game on this device, then I say it's worth it.
Yeah, it is, I mean, it is a premium. It's like $69 still for that thing. Next email is from Rich Meyer. He says, excellent show. I listen every week. I plan on making a basement water alarm with this. And he's going for the Pi Zero giveaway. I plan on making a basement water alarm for this using email or SMS as the notification, then adding some IoT functions later on. Those are very good ideas.
Very cool. Yeah, and I believe I did point him also to the Hackster.io website we found in like week two or three, and they have a complete Raspberry Pi section with now, I believe it's over 300 projects, heavily documented step by step by step. So if you have any kind of project idea, I'm sure you can either find a solution on that website or a path toward your solution.
I think that's all the emails I had for this one. And if you guys have Android phones, and I think a lot of people are going to have more of them here pretty soon because they're coming out with an iPhone 7, and that's like every time, just brings more people to Android every time Apple brings out the same thing in a different box. We just gave away a Google Cardboard, and congratulations to Scott on the Android App Addict show. He won that one. So if you win a Pi Zero and you want to win some more stuff, or you didn't win a Pi Zero, we give away stuff on that show too.
Yeah. Okay, now me and Eric were talking a little bit before the show, and Brian, and Eric said he had noobs that he was playing with, but he wanted to try something different. So on line 222...
Berry Boot is what I was using.
Oh, Berry Boot, sorry. Berry Boot is like Noobs. It just has a little bit more options to it. I'm not sure it's as up-to-date as Noobs, but you have more options, which I'm all in favor for. On line 222, there's a thing called Pi Bakery, and it's on the official RaspberryPi.org website. And the first couple times I saw the link pass through my stream, I'm not clicking it. I'm a man. I grill and I cook. My wife bakes. I let her bake. I don't bake. Bake is an exact science. You have to get the measurements exactly right. I'm not an exactly right measurement kind of guy. I'm the kind of guy, I just throw stuff in the pot and throw stuff in the pan, and I use like immediate feedback on how it smells and tastes to either add more or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm not a baker. So I saw this link and I just said, and then somebody on Google Plus basically hit me up and said, Dory, you got to look at this. Okay. What Pi Bakery is, I don't know if Eric was ever aware of this one. On Android, you had a thing called the Kitchen.
No.
And what the Kitchen was a application you would download and install, go through a wizard process, and then it would take sometimes 12 hours, and it would punch out the other end of the application, a completely customized ROM that you could install on your Android device. Okay, that's basically what this is. Pi Bakery is an application for Mac and Windows. I believe they said it's coming for Linux. I don't believe it's out for Linux yet. But if you've ever used MIT App Inventor back in the day, it was a very drag-and-drop interface to where you could build simple applications. And what this is, it borrows that same mechanic of drag-and-drop things together to make a custom Debian-based Raspbian distribution for your Pi device where you can go through and say, on every boot, set up the Wi-Fi, set up the network, install VNC, set the password, download a script file, run a script file, set the password, run this server, run this script. You can in this interface very quickly, I'm going to use a Joe Heck term here, using rapid development processes, you can very quickly create a pretty custom OS. Now, this isn't like the Armbian, where Armbian you could do more software tweaks and driver tweaks. This is more of the front door, the front window kind of tweaking. You can say on the first boot, I would like to install VNC. I would like to install own cloud. I would like to install Synergy. And then you can say, and every boot after that, automatically start up VNC, automatically start up Synergy, and those kind of things. I really do highly encourage people, if you're thinking about redoing the OS on your Raspberry Pi computer, take a look at Pi Bakery. Hopefully it will be out for Linux really soon. And you basically just download, click and drag, customize your experience, and you basically just hit a export button or a write button, and it will write it to your SD card, boot it up, and away you go. And here's the kicker. This was created by a 17-year-old man, because this ain't no boy. He's writing this kind of stuff. He's a man. Okay, this is the kind of thing I honestly love to bring to any show, because it slowly helps me renew my faith in the future of this country.
Yeah, and if he's got other people contributing to this, this could grow quite a bit. I mean, they could have all kinds of options over time. I think of a custom boot screen, you know, like a splash screen that I'd like to, you know, do every time it boots up, or things like that too, man. Just make it your own, right. Really, you know.
Oh, yeah. And here's the logic. He better control the floodgates, because I'm thinking he definitely has people now saying, I'd like to help. Managing that community is a very difficult thing, so take it slow. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can right now install this on Linux. What you need to do is you need to install Git. You need to clone the code repo from down the server, but then you have to install npm. NPM is Node Package Manager. Node Package Manager is like saying, I have a gasoline-powered car. Let me download this diesel compatibility layer. It's a pretty heavy thing that doesn't always work exactly as it should. My experience with Node Package Manager is good luck.
A great analogy, Dor. I love that.
It is a good analogy.
And honestly, before you install NPM, if you're doing it on a full-fledged production rig, take a disk image of that computer before you do. Mm-hmm. Because once you install NPM and start trying to download other stuff and load other stuff, your computer might not be as reliable after that.
Wow. I'm downloading the Xe for Windows right now. I'm going to play with this. Yeah. Can't wait.
And here's the gimmick. You can probably do this in a VM on any OS kind of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because micro SD cards should appear to the VM just like a mass storage media. So you still should be able to write to the card just fine. I will say that. You should. And I ain't going to lie. I'm really tempted to install a 180-day free version of Windows and download the Windows version, because once I see NPM, I become a little gun-shy.
Where can buy a Mac?
Let me think about that again for a couple of seconds, Eric. Okay. Mac, an Apple, a Macintosh, Steve Jobs, Palo Alto. No, I'm not.
Boy, I guess I don't have any ideas for Dora this week, Brian. He is not having it.
Well,
Jesus.
if it involves cats or Macintosh computers in any shape, way, or form, I'm pretty sure you're always going to get the same answer from me.
Well, I mean, watching cats, though, isn't like living with them. Somebody actually has to live in that house with all them webcams and those kittens.
Well, I know, but what I'm afraid of is like my wife or my kid walking and seeing that and then thinking they now have a free pass for a cat. No.
It's kind of a dirty voyeuristic thing, because you're actually waiting for the human, you know, eventually you're going to see the human go in there and move something or feed them or something, you know.
Okay. Brian, did you have anything you want to talk about?
Let's move along. So this Pi Bakery is pretty cool. It does look very scratch-ish. And to be honest with you, I think my 10-year-old son could probably operate this and be able to pull something off successfully. I think I'm going to download it on my Windows machine myself. I really enjoy something like this. What would be very cool is if when you're building this, if you can kind of peek behind the curtain a little bit to see how the code is being put together, so that it'll, you know, aid you a little bit on programming, you know, and code or developing rather. I think that's a pretty unique tool here.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is, technically speaking, it's on GitHub, so it is possible that this could be a request you could add to. Because I would too like to say turn on verbose mode and step through, so you can see, oh, it's downloading this. Oh, it's editing this. Oh, it's putting this at the bottom of this configuration file. Oh, cool.
Right.
Yeah, because that to me could be an extremely hand-holding educational experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've already highlighted it. Fantastic.
Oh, sorry. Good. Yes. That's what I meant to do. Yes. Well, what a highlight.
I was looking at the spreadsheet. I was going to highlight that link. That's a pretty useful tool.
Absolutely.
Definitely have to check that out.
Well, the other one I highlighted. Okay. I used to say 5 years ago, if you want a future career, learn Linux. Learn Linux, learn Linux. Time and time again, Linux administrators get paid more than Windows administrators, period. There's no ifs, there's no ands, there's no buts. They just do. They used to not have as many jobs, so it was harder to get jobs. Now it's that title shift is changing, and Linux is starting to become really popular for jobs. But now what I'm telling people is if you want a future career, the best possible field to get into is security. And it's only because security is going to continuously get harder, more complicated, and more necessary to do preemptive, offensive testing of your network and of your devices. So on line 214, I saw this and I got a little giddy because I never heard of such a thing. On the site False Force, they have a thing called Black Arch. Black Arch is kind of like Kali Linux, but of course it's based off Arch, so all the Arch people will say it's better. And on this version, they have over 1,500 tools towards penetration testing and vulnerability assessment. So you want to get into security and literally get into professional grade, wide area network, enterprise grade security. All you need is a Raspberry Pi and a copy of Black Arch to put on your network and pound away. See what you can do. See what you can learn. See what you can exploit on your own network, not on your neighbor's network, not on your school's network, not on your job's network, not on the library's network, not on the McDonald's network, not any place else except for the network you own and control, or else you might end up in jail. But this is the kind of tool where I can believe very shortly will be considered one of the standard tools that you can use.
What kind of things would you do, Dor?
Wow.
With it?
Okay, well, for instance, if you had a HP printer that was Ethernet enabled, it comes installed by default with an old version of a web server on it, you can try to exploit that web server, get yourself a foothold into that, and use that to island hop, or use that as your base device and use that to then get access to other devices on the network and try to learn other exploits, whether it be via Windows shares, Samba shares, FTP type things, or you could literally plant a honeypot, but something purposely out there for other people to stumble across and then get infected by your tools kind of thing. I always think of pen testing as finding that one niche in the armor that you can slowly or rapidly slam your sword through that hole, because that's all you need to get into any network. And after shows like Mr. Robot, I literally go into work the following day and sweat, worrying about it, because I know what's possible out there. And that show reminds me of just how stuff could go down.
I got a friend of mine who...
Great show, by the way.
I haven't seen season 2 at all yet. I need to catch up on that.
It's a touch freaky.
I got a friend who does pen testing for an accounting firm, and that's his 9-to-5. And they'll send him all over the place, and he just tries to break into banks and things. And he used to be the one I would always call whenever I had networking issues that were above me at any place. I would always call him. I'd pay him a lot of money, but they would pay him a lot of money, really. But he was my networking guy, and man, this guy, he was good. He knew his stuff. I don't know how Linux-y he was, though, you know, as far as that goes. I think if you're going to college, I don't know if they're teaching you Windows or Linux or both, but I think, you know, like you said, the Linux way, you may have an edge over the other guys. Because the way, as an outsider, it seems to me that you're getting taught in college the Windows stuff, and then you learn in the field the Linux stuff as needed.
I would say even Microsoft understands how useful and powerful Linux is. You know, at this point, they've already crossed over and created their own Linux distribution.
Yeah.
but think of the actual footprint required for you to gain the knowledge that you need to have a successful career just with something like this? I mean, what does it take? $35? You know, a bit, definitely under $100 to get yourself started. Whereas, you know, someone that was thinking of becoming a Cisco administrator, you know, wanted to get started in Cisco administration or a network administrator, the footprint to get started in that, it's way bigger, you know, with all the boot camps that are out there and the training materials. You're looking to spend thousands of dollars, you know, to get yourself started in the right direction, as opposed to something like this, you know, learning Linux.
Yeah, that whole thing. What you're really going to have to pay for is time. How much time can you set aside? And I can promise you guys this. If you get the Raspberry Pi, if you download this, and then if you watch YouTube videos about how to use these tools, 4 to 6 to 8 hours a week of research and playing around, in under a year, you will be competitive in the market. Because in the market, while certs can help get your name higher up in the resume chain, if you can get your door in as a trainee-type position and you show the skills, you will quickly surpass people with certs with less street experience, I'll say.
Right.
Yeah, this is really cool. This is the kind of thing I purposely tell myself I cannot get into, at least not yet, because, you know, jail and police and stuff. Because once you learn this stuff, my logic is if you're not using it in your job, you're too tempted to say, hey, I'm going over Mike's house to watch some Premier football. I wonder how his neighborhood is set up with Wi-Fi security. Let me find out.
The next link, right?
Covering your tracks is always the best thing.
The next link right below that one door, that's, you know, I thought dnumedia.com was a great website. That one, the Chromium OS for SBC.org website is superb. I love it. It almost puts mine to shame, I would have to say. But I can't wait.
Honestly, I can't remember. Oh, yeah.
It's line 250.
Okay.
But I'm excited.
This is incredibly clever SEO marketing. I don't want to call it straight up vaporware or whatever, but it's sketchy in the sense of this. You cannot have a Chrome OS on anything else except for a Chromebook. Period. 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 Not comma, not apostrophe, not colon, not semicolon, not tilde. No. Period. Because Chrome is much, much, much more than just the login in the browser. Chrome is the ecosystem that ensures every time you boot up, it does hash checking and it verifies that the OS is secure. It then can reinstall from a ROM chip on the board, I'm pretty sure, the OS if something does go wrong. So you're never going to get that level of functionality, the level of stability that you get with Chrome OS. Okay, so then here comes Chromium OS. What the hell is Chromium OS? Chromium OS is like getting Android, but no Google Play, no Google Maps, no Google Hangouts, no YouTube, no Gmail, no nothing. All you get is the OS itself. So what you get then is a quick bootable browser that doesn't have Flash capabilities and that isn't really secure, and that won't do inline updates and won't keep itself upgraded. So to install this and run this, I don't want to say it isn't smart, but you're always going to be behind the curve. You're never going to be up to date. Because it's Chromium, I don't see how they're going to do Flash at all, which, you know, whatever. But they have a very pretty website with water, and I've seen this link now on all kinds of websites. Free open version of Chrome OS is coming. No, it's not. It's not. And we already have it. You just install any Linux distribution, install Chrome, set it to launch on startup. There you go.
Yeah. Kiosk mode.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, I think of the Remix OS when I see this, you know, really. It should be similar to that, right? Wouldn't you think?
Well, Remix is more capable. Remix is a full-fledged Android customized to be more desktop, laptop-like, and you can install the Google Play services on and it runs just fine. I think of that as like where something like CyanogenMod could have been if they would have kept the course on what they were doing instead of worrying about profit and politics and Microsoft money.
No, but you can't run a Remix OS on a mini PC yet, can you? On like a Raspberry Pi or a
yes.
C2? Oh, you can.
Yes. They officially support the Pine 64 and at least one other mini computer form factor where they literally customize it for that. Mm. And I'm not going to say the experience you get is perfect or great, but considering Pine 64 is a $15 computer or whatever, the experience you get is well worth $15. In my opinion.
Okay. Amen.
But, that's a great ad for Squarespace, I would have to say, you know.
Yeah, right? I'm putting Squarespace on there.
Okay. Okay, now one of these links in here, I want to say it's 225. It's a link that you brought, Brian, to what is right now affectionately called the Mi Box, M-I space B-O-X. Which is a hardware device from MyUI, which has done ROMs and hardware for now 4+ years. And in the Asian market, they're like number 2 or 3. They're definitely up there. Mm-hmm. Here's the dirty secret. You do know what this box is, right?
Go ahead and tell me, Joel.
This is what they showed off at Google I.O. back in May. It is going to be the next Android TV, officially Google branded Android TV set top box.
Well, it's funny you say that because this is what Xiaomi actually showed off back in May as well too. If I'm not repeating what you just said,
but it's the same company. It's like saying I don't know. It's like saying Dell and XPS. Xiaomi is the main hardware company. My is the software on top of it.
I gotcha. Yeah, this looks very appealing. And the reason why I actually put it in the show notes is along with my recent purchase of the Home Run HD network streaming video capturing card, I'm actually looking for a few set-top boxes. And I was going to go with the Shield Android TV. But to me, that's a pretty steep price point for a set-top box. You know, I want to buy multiples, and I don't want to spend $200 or more for a set-top box. So I figured anything under $100 or $100 would be pretty decent. And this kind of caught my radar a little bit.
Yeah.
But it hasn't come to the U.S. market yet, and it doesn't have any dates of when it's actually going to be released to the U.S. It's already gone through the FCC regulation, so it is available for sale. It just hasn't come to market yet. So,
yeah, we're recording on September 7th. 2 weeks is what I'm saying, Brian. In 2 weeks, when they announce formally that the Nexus devices are dead and the next and the next phones are going to be Pixel devices, at that same event is where I think they're going to make this official announcement of this Android TV box. And here's one thing this box does. I'm going to tell you that no other quality piece of hardware set-top box that I can find does. And that is, it will act as a Chromecast device. To where you can have it plugged up to your TV on your phone, go through Netflix right before you hit play, say cast to your Mi device, and bang, there you go. It's going to work. Dare I say, like butter. The only thing that literally makes me just a touch, I don't want to say squeamish, hesitant, which makes me want to wait until I hear reviews from people, is it only has 2 gigs of RAM. I'm a firm believer RAM in Android is directly proportional to positive experience. I do think it's possible to do 2 gigs of RAM and have a very good experience, but you're going to have that OS running really tight, really like fine-tuned kind of thing. So I wish them nothing but luck. I hope it is a good device. I hope none of the content companies decide, oh, this device is getting too popular, we're going to stop our service from playing on it kind of thing, which has happened in the past. Because they do have more than a couple names on board that say they're going to work out of the box. Like Vudu, like Plex, Food Networks, Travel Networks, Netflix, Hulu Plus, Pandora, P PBS Kids, MLB, NBA. I mean, that's all good names to have on your piece of hardware. What I don't see is stuff like HBO Go, which they've been notorious about not letting their stuff run on devices. But if it's a Chromecast device, then maybe you can Chromecast it.
That's one thing I like about the Fire Stick, too. It's Chromecastable also. Use that all the time.
Yeah, that's a great option. Here's where I think 2 gigs of RAM is going to be enough. When you have a mini PC and you're using your mini PC as a straight up, you know, word processor, surfing the internet and so forth, 2 gigs of RAM I think is going to hinder your performance a little bit. But when you're in a lean back position, you know, switching channels and watching video and things like that, you're not really taxing the processor all that much and calling for memory all that much as well, too. Now, if you're gaming, doing some light gaming from, you know, the App Store, if you have access to the Play Store and stuff like that, that might take the performance hit a little bit. But in a lean back type performance, I don't think you're gonna see that much of a shrink. I've seen some boxes out there running 1 gig of RAM, and I know with that you're gonna see a little bit of a hit. You know, you're gonna take a little bit of hit with switching from channel to channel, but not as much if you had 2 gigs of RAM. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen phones with 2 gigs of RAM run good. I've seen phones with 2 gigs of RAM run horribly. It's almost like a question of bloatware. What else does it have running in the background?
Right.
And I do believe there are more than a couple games that can do good. The one thing that this is supposed to have, this is supposed to have a good GPU in it that can do 60 frame a second, 4K. And to me, that's going to be like the make or break thing. If it can do that kind of video decoding efficiently, 2 gigs is perfectly fine. And I'll say, I do like the look of the game controller that you can get with it. I'm the guy, I've always dreamt almost about an Android set-top gaming system type box, just because I know with the ecosystem and the screen variation from watch to phone to tablet to laptop to desktop to TV, you should be able to draw a lot of developers in to make games. So I really do. I really want this to be a really successful device, but even if it's $50, I'm not buying it day one. I'm going to wait.
Oh, Dor, this is not going to be a $50 box, is it?
I know.
This will be more. Yeah. I wonder how much it's going to cost. And I didn't know if Brian, or if you guys have heard of any rumors. And then it does not run my UI. It runs something called Android TV 6. So that's the OS that's going to run?
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be an Android TV box. I think they've been hinting around, they haven't really nailed down a price yet, but they've been hinting around anything under $100. And I think that we might see something like that. It's funny enough because I'm looking at the processor here. This is running a quad-core ARM Cortex A53 CPU. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the same processor that's in the Odroid C2. And what's that? The S905, I believe?
Sounds right. I'm horrible with that kind of memory, I'll say. This looks like a slightly older version I was able to find on Geekbuying, which is my overseas Amazon go-to whenever I want hardware not sold in the U.S. And it says it's a Show Me 3 Mi Box 4K Android 5.0. So yes, it's not the current version. Only has 1 gig of RAM on it, like you were saying, B4, and it's $58. So my guess is 80-ish is going to be the launch price, maybe like $9 more. But what I hope is 30 to 60 days later, it sells so good, they push the price down to 70 to sell even more, kind of thing. Because I could see this as being a good gift for people this holiday season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I saw the, I can't remember the gentleman's name, who actually used to work at Google, that took the job over at Xiaomi.
I can't remember.
I want to say Sergey. Is it Sergey?
I'm not sure.
Botch it. No. Okay. But either way, he's the gentleman that's promoting this device here. And I was watching his rant, and it looked pretty slick. You know, it did look pretty smooth. It didn't look glitchy. It didn't freeze up on him. You know, I take that with a grain of salt. But but given that, and the experience with what you've had with the Odroid as well too, what I've gone to do, because like I say, I'm in the market for a set-top box, I'm actually searching for my set-top boxes by the actual processor that it's running with the amount of RAM that I'm looking for. So anything with a quad-core, Cortex A53, or even A57 with 2 gigs of RAM, I think I'm going to try to test the waters a little bit and see what the performance is, see what the reviews are, and just kind of look in that particular market. So if this does come out, and if I haven't chosen what I want just yet, I think I might just kind of, like you said, look at the reviews before I jump on it. But it does look very, very, very appealing.
Right. Well, it looks like you got it. Oh, okay. It's pre-order. Okay. So on Geek Buying right now, you can pre-order the new box. It says it's going to ship in 21 days. Roughly around October 1st, $99. Now, I'll say this. What I've seen in the past when these devices are $100, when they come over to the U.S., because they're able to ship them in bulk over in the U.S., they typically do come down in price at least 10%. That's my logic. So if you really wanted to get your foot in the door right now, you could go onto Geek Buying. I'll make sure I have the link in the notes to where you can get it. It's on Geek Buying, and it's the official international version of the 4K Mi Box running Android TV 6.0. That's it. That is it.
Hugo Barra, I think, is the guy who was
with Google. Hugo, yes, that sounds very familiar. Thanks, Eric. Hey, so if you guys want to take a look at line 231, I was poking around the website. Let's see. This is CNXsoftware.com website. This is the gentleman that has a Google Plus page for mini PCs, and he does some pretty good reviews on mini PCs. And he happened to do an article, on the AMLogic S905 ARM processors, which we were just speaking about. For the Xiaomi Mi Box and the Odroid C2. Now, AMLogic is claiming that these processors can go up to 2 gigahertz. And I think what the controversy is that some of them aren't hitting that peak performance. They're going about 1.5 to 1.75 gigahertz. And he actually supplied, it's a pretty good article, he actually supplied a spreadsheet here with all of the ARM processors and the clock speeds. So it looks like some testing was done. And it looks like, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, honestly, I've never ran benchmarking tools on my C2. I just ran it and was either happy or not happy with the performance of it. I can look into that, and I can see if there is a tweak tool to where if it is running at 1.5, what happens if I push it up to 2? And, you know, does it fry? Does it lock up? Or does it just work?
Yeah, I'm curious. Now, this article was written August 28th, 2016, so just a week ago.
Well, and I'll say there's one key line I'm seeing in this article. And first I'll say this is not the first I've heard of this. Joe Heck said in the past he had definite issues with verbiage in descriptions of processors, because you would have some processors calling themselves quad core when they would only have 2 cores active at a time. Two cores devoted to high-end processing, and then 2 cores devoted to the low-end processing, and only 2 of them would be activated at a time. And then a different board person would call their stuff quad core, where all 4 would be going at the same time. He said, so there's no standardization in the verbiage. Here's the line I'm noticing, and it's below the image of the Odroid. It says, in quotes, the device claims to run at 2 gigahertz, but on the kernel, But I'm sorry, but the kernel slightly ignores frequencies above 1.5. That right there verbiage makes me say, stop. What is the OS you're running? Have you applied all your updates? And have you tried different operating systems? Because maybe it's just that kernel is not utilizing the processor correctly instead of the processor basically not able to go above that or is at defaulted at 1.5.
Right.
I'm not going to say they're wrong. I'm just going to say when you make a statement like that in insinuating the kernel silently ignores frequencies above that, to me, that's not a hardware problem. That's an OS configuration problem. And it might be their official version of Linux that they're putting out there, hard kernel. I don't know. I'm not claiming to know, but I know if he's only testing one operating system on this, I feel a little bit disappointed in the article header, but it's still something that should be addressed and should be answered either way.
No, I fully agree with you. I was just about to call that out too as well. And I'm not really too sure if this is something that AM Logic can look at to be corrected, or depending on, like you said, if the type of OS that you're running should look at this as well too. But it's something that needs to be addressed either way, you know.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's literally nothing more than a kernel optimization setting that was not set right on one release of the distro. But that's me literally generously, positively speculating about Odroid and hard kernel. And it's only because of my satisfaction with the device that I say that.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, and I really hope it's just that.
Absolutely. Hey, there was another one on line 239. Nope, 229. My apologies. Oh, hang on a second. I'm wrong again. 230, line 230. This was a set-top box that I enjoyed looking at, not only because of the internal components, but man, it just looks really, really cool to look at.
Ah, very eye-pleasing. Mm-hmm. Gotta say that.
Yeah.
Okay, this is, okay, they're doing a great job on the feng shui, the form look of the device, but it looks like it's called the T95Z Plus. Need to do a little bit of work on their naming.
And when
you're on the right path.
And when Dor says plus, it's spelled out. It's the T95Z PLUS.
Yeah. This to me is a very acceptable device to have sitting next to your TV in the living room, like where I have my Odroid C2 in a transparent case, blinking lights at you with a Wi-Fi dongle hanging off of it, blinking lights at you. It's not the most appealing looking thing. Okay, so this says it has an octa-core A53 processor up to 1.5, ARM Mali 820 MP3, which I do believe is one of those fair GPUs by today's standard. It isn't a great one, but it's definitely good. 2 gigabytes of DDR3, genuine DDR3, 16 gig eMMC flash. Onboard storage is always going to be quicker in writing. So I like having more than 8 on board. Plus, it also has a micro SD slot. To me, that'd be a really nice, handy way to transplant files around your house instead of having to drag them over the network and wait. HDMI, AV ports, SPDIF out, video codecs, VP9, 60 frames a second, H.265, very up-to-date codecs. Connectivity, gigabit Ethernet. I like real gigabit Ethernet. And dual band, BGN. Not AC, but BGN is still really good as far as I'm concerned. And a built-in IR receiver. That's good.
No. Okay. It says that this box is said to run Android 6.0 with Kodi. This Android 6.0 is a different operating system than that my box, right? That was Android TV 6.0. Is that correct? It's not the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it's the same and different. It's like saying, well, I got the Mustang. Well, I got the Mustang GT. It's the same, but under the hood, it's a little bit different. TV just means the interface and the settings are more optimized for big screen experience.
Okay.
Where this isn't. And I'll say this. that's not a game breaker, nor should it be a game breaker. It's just something else to take note on. Like this probably cannot be a Chromecast receiving device.
Right.
Right.
Now, gotcha. Here's the whole question. I look at all the specs. I don't scroll all the way down. Beauty of the product, this has to be minimum $40 to $50 device is my logic. I look at all the options, and then I think gigabit Ethernet, BNG, 802.11, Bluetooth 4.0, 2 gigs of RAM. I'm pushing this to be more than a $50 device. Did you guys see a price?
Yeah, it's $60.99 on Banggood. And AliExpress for $66.51.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
So just for descriptions of the folks that can't see this, so it's got a, what kind of shape would you call this? Like a octagon? Kind of?
It's honeycomb.
Six sides. What's so six-sided? I don't remember.
Hexagon.
There you go. It's a hexagon.
It's like it's a hexagon-shaped box, and the front of it has a... like a honeycomb print on it with a, kind of looks like a tire print, a honeycomb tire print. And, it's got, laser cutted edges on the top with like a rainbow stripe, pinstripe near the top as well, too. And I'm wondering if that actually lights up. That would be pretty cool if that actually lit up.
It does. It says,
to me, it can, it's got an RG. Light up, but it, I hope,
it's got a,
but hopefully it doesn't like oscillate.
It's got a red
RGB
LED strip in it. So yes, it could oscillate, I suppose. You know, I don't understand.
That's pretty snazzy.
I've seen a couple of these little, I don't know if they're mini PCs or set top boxes, but where they have a clock on the front of them, I'm not sure that I would ever need that in this day and age. Do I need anything on the outside displaying?
If you don't have a set-top box, if you're a cord cutter, if you don't have a Blu-ray player or a VCR, and this is your only input device to your television, I can see it being there. You know, it can't hurt.
A what? A V what?
Exactly.
What's that?
It's kind of like a Betamax player, only bigger.
I was at an estate sale not too long ago, and my daughter was in the room, and there's this couple, a dad and a kid. And the kid was trying to convince the dad to buy VHS tapes because they're going to be worth a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
I don't know where she get that, where she figured that would ever be a thing, but I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess
Eric, I have to say about 10 years ago, when I was a cable installer, we were launching some different types of cable boxes. Now some had the clock displays on it, which displayed the time, and some didn't. And we got a lot of pushback from the cable boxes that did not have a display clock on it. So yeah, you'd be surprised that people actually still want a display on their set-top boxes.
I understand that 15 years ago when you didn't have a phone sitting right next to you all day long, including the time that you're on a recliner in your living room. I'm never away from a clock anymore. You know, I always know what time it is.
Well, la-di-da, Mr. Fancy.
Well, I don't know. It's not that I'm showing off anyway. I think a lot of the people who are listening to this show probably can figure out the time when they're wondering, you know, without looking at their TV box.
I don't know. My son sits there, stares at his phone, watching horrible YouTube videos, and horrible, I mean, is in no class of anything. Yeah.
Any examples?
He literally hits pause. No, because they're that crappy. He then hits pause and turns to me and says, "Hey, Dad, what time is it?"
Are you serious?
Yes, I am. It's That's right funny. On your phone. I'm watching a video.
Yeah, and he's even got YouTube Plus where he could still listen to the video while he checks the time and go right back without missing much.
Yeah.
I know, but he has to watch YouTube Red, crappy game players like Roblox, which to me is like, it's like a genetically modified goat that gives no cheese. Just play Minecraft. I mean, Roblox is bad. Bad.
Yeah, my kids are playing that stuff too.
Okay, one more I want to throw out there, and it's line 227. And I wanted to bring this one up just because of one name in the title. And this is over at sitepoint.com, And it was forecast the weather on your Raspberry Pi and Bluemix. Bluemix is an IBM technology. IBM, you know, Watson, smart computing, Big Blue, you don't get fired for buying IBM kind of mentality. And one of the things it utilizes in this, if you take a look at the very top, it's called Node-RED. Okay, Node-RED. Node-RED is part of the Node package management system. And I tried to get the damn thing working on my 16.06 Ubuntu install, and it go boom. It don't want to work. Node-RED is kind of like if this, then that, that you own on your network that you can point either to outside websites or to internal IoT-type sensors and triggers and do actions based upon triggered events. So I really did like the idea of Node-RED a lot. I just got to dedicate a Pi device to it and try to get it installed. And Bluemix is, I don't want to say a front end, but it's a prettier interface to try to do some of this Internet of Things connectivity and information pushing is what I'm going to say. So with Bluemix from IBM, Raspberry Pi, and Node-RED, you're able to do weather forecasting, displaying, or propagating from your Raspberry Pi. This was, I think, part three of their tutorial, if I'm not mistaken. So I got to go back and I got to read this thing. Because it looks that interesting enough to me to at least learn what they're doing, learn what they're trying to do. If you page down a couple times, you see the Node-RED interface. And it's honestly kind of like that MIT App Inventor-esque clickable, draggable web interface of triggers and events and flows of data. I love the idea of this. I would love to get it working. I just got to take the time to sit down and try to do it. And as you can tell by looking at the steps, it's not completely easy.
Right. It's almost like a cookbook. Just follow the recipes and hopefully your souffle will turn out fine.
Just like baking, huh?
Adore. No, yeah. I hope it's not like baking. No. No, it's my kryptonite.
Well, if you scroll down even farther, then you can actually see some code, too, instead of just the tags with plugs. I don't know what that is, so.
Good, then hopefully I can just copy-paste.
Yeah, you can't really copy-paste those little tags with wires sticking out of them.
Yeah, this, to me, is the functionality. Now, what's going to need to happen is people are going to need to take the end result of these configurations. What needs to happen is, and then they push a single button, and they can push an executable or an installable application or a Python package where, okay, now if you want this type of functionality on your network, download this, put in your zip code, put in your preferences of Celsius, Fahrenheit, all that kind of thing, and now you can do it yourself too. I am very appreciative that they give you the ability to build this all up in however you see fit, but I also would like to have the ability to say, hey, Richard Hughes, you already made one of these, didn't you? Hit export for that for me, baby. And then, you know, I just take it to mine, click import, and away I go.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, technology, the golden rule of technology is stand on the shoulders of giants. I'm not a giant. I'm a guy that stands on somebody else's shoulders.
I mean, they make it look like it'd be really fun to do, though, you know, with that GUI.
Well, I guarantee you it's not difficult. It's just particular. And I guarantee you it's at least a little bit educational and fulfilling when you're done and it works.
So tell me, what would you use something like this for? What potential applications would you try to use this in?
To me, like 5 a.m. in the morning or something, I would send a text message to my phone, what's today's forecast? Or something like that. So when I get up in the morning, I would know if there's a severe accident on the road. What is the weather forecast like today? You know, or like I could right now say, you know, Saturday, she would like to go to the amusement park. Okay, every morning for the next 5 mornings, tell me how Saturday's looking so we can have an idea of how it's shaping up kind of thing. I can always see use cases for these, but I also know most of my use cases are almost one-off use cases. I would use it, and then for a week I wouldn't use it, and then for a week I would use it kind of.
I see a lot of these things. I mean, if you did that example of what you just said with the two, if you had a flip phone, be perfect. You could send a text message with that stuff. Otherwise, you just have like a Dark Skies app tells you about the weather at 5 o'clock in the morning, and Waze will tell you if there's traffic.
No, Waze sucks. First off, okay, Waze doesn't tell you nothing. Waze doesn't tell you nothing until you're in your car and moving. I would like to know before that, okay? And the reason I like text messages is weather pop-ups on your phone, it's too easy to ignore and swipe away. And then you have to remember to install the app. Then you have to remember to configure the app. Then you got to, you know, all this kind of crap. If it's a text message, that's a normal thing that you're used to seeing. And when you see it, you address it. That's my logic.
Yeah, I don't know. If I had too many of those, I'd ignore them too.
Yeah.
Especially since, I use Hangouts for my messages, so they do get kind of blurred with the rest of the static, you know.
Well, that's not going to happen for too much longer.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
What's that?
Hangouts for my messaging, my SMS application.
Oh, yes.
They're killing it like King Louis, and this is the French Revolution. You know, he's on his way to the guillotine.
Well, gentlemen, do you guys have anything else you want to talk about before we round it up?
I mean, we have plenty more links, I got to say that. So if you're thirsty for more content out there, just join the Google Plus community, Mini PC Show. And while you're at it, join Joe Heck's SBC Computer Group as well. The combination of those two, I guarantee you, you will have your fill of all the content you can handle. And then some. And Joe should be coming out with episode 2 here, I believe, very shortly, where he's going to address some of his production issues. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. When that show is out, we will let you know.
Cool, Dor.
Nice.
How about you, Brian? Do you have any anything you want to say to the folks before we end off?
I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I mean, that's a really, really awesome treat that we have some awesome, cool listeners out there with really great emails. And just keep the emails coming. I think it's really good to hear from everyone.
I'll second that. All in favor say aye. Aye, yeah. So yeah, keep the emails coming. And thanks for your support. And check out the other shows on Podnuts. That's a lot of good listening. And we will see you hopefully next week. If not, it'll be 2 weeks. If not, it'll be next week. All right, thanks.